Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
It's time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Dave Tree.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today, as always, you're my Windy City buddy. Introduce yourself.
I'm Windy something, that's for sure. Hi everyone, it's Dave Tree from All the Cool Stuff. Yeah, this is the first post-Chicago celebration Making Tracks episode. It's all gone really quick, hasn't it? It felt like a lifetime when we were out there, but now it's a click of Thanos' fingers or snap of his fingers and like 2-3 weeks have gone by that quick, and it's kind of like, wow, I don't think I've even fully unpacked yet.
Celebration went really, really quickly, even though it was 5 days and it was a long 5 days, but it was a fun 5 days. Caused all sorts of trouble as usual. I enjoyed celebration, it was good. But like you say, we've been back, what, 3 weeks? That's ridiculous. Where's that gone?
No idea at all. It's literally flown by and everything just seems a bit of a blur, to be honest.
Well, it never seems to stop for us, does it? Or Fanta Tracks as a team. I was at Star Wars Fan Fun Day with Carl and Claire. Yeah, and Andy Litter was up there, so that was a nice busy weekend. And dinner with the stars the night before, and there seems to be stuff happening all over the place at the moment. But before we move into the episode proper, and we've got some stuff that we've had hanging around forever, so we want to get that out, and stuff fresh as a daisy from Star Wars Fan Fun Day, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I would be remiss if we didn't mention, obviously, the sad passing of Peter Mayhew. What are your thoughts on that, Dave? Firstly, when you heard the news, it seemed terribly shocking news to come through.
We were all on a Skype call together when it all sort of broke. It was hugely unexpected. I mean, it's never a comforting thing when these things happen, and they are sadly coming more and more often than we'd like to admit. It was a great, great sadness because I think particularly with Chewbacca as a character, it's not that he's just like a well-loved character. It's where you kind of have this new generation of Chewie as well in the new films, and Jonas taking that torchbearer. I mean, I remember saying in at Chicago for the episode 9 panel, Jonas literally said, you know, I'd like to give a huge shout out to my mentor Peter Mayhew and things like that. So even though Peter had effectively retired by that point, he was still very much involved in it. You know, it's a huge shame. I haven't actually interacted with Peter for well over a decade or so, certainly in like the 90s where he was available some of the smaller conventions and things like that, and before like the Men Behind the Masks tour, you know, because that's when it all really, really took off, I think, for Star Wars signing and stuff like that. Yeah, he was always very, very, very chatty and interacted with everybody. But my favorite Peter Mayhew story isn't actually anything directly to do with Peter himself. A friend who ran shows in Wales, and he had Peter Mayhew as a guest. It was a good 10 years ago. And it's the only time I've known someone have to give someone a refund for their ticket entry because they were complaining about the fact that Peter wasn't in his Chewbacca costume. And the guy argued that because he advertised him as the character Chewbacca on the poster, that's not what was here. And Steve was like trying to explain to the guy, like, no, the pictures are there so you know who it is that we've got as a guest. And this guy was having none of it. You know, he was really digging in his heels and saying, nope, I've been missold. I demand my money back. Literally, it was the funniest thing ever. I don't know if ever that got back to Peter as to what happened that day, but I know Steve was completely perplexed. Just literally like, I don't get it. What was this guy expecting exactly? That was I was like in tears at the time because it was just so surreal. What about yourself? When did you first start interacting with Peter? I mean, what are your prevailing memories of Peter?
Similar. I think seeing him at smaller UK shows and memorabilia and places like that, here, there and everywhere. But my first real interaction with him was when I interviewed him for Lightsaber. He'd just got his citizenship, and I can't remember off the top of my head whether it was a day after or a week after, but it was no more than that. It was either, if you'd have spoke to me this time yesterday, I was swearing in myself as an American citizen sort of thing, naturalised American.
Yeah.
So we did this really cool interview, just put it on the site actually, the audio of it on the site. And it was a really good interview. I sent him some questions, so we kind of worked our way through the questions, and he thought some of them were quite funny. So that was neat, you know, and then just over the years, because we swapped email addresses obviously to do this interview, I think there was a few little bits and bobs for the insider here and there, and then never any great sit down and chat, but you know, I think we did Essen Celebration Europe 2 in Essen. We were sat on a table, Peter was a couple of seats down, so sort of chit-chatting there, and so it was always just, you know, sort of a couple of minutes hello, no great long conversation. But that being said, only a few months ago it was another email exchange to pull together an interview for the insider. Okay, so we're going to step back quite a few months now. We're going back to the end of last year, believe it or not. We're going back to MonCalCon, when we had as our guest Ross Sandridge. I was lucky enough to interview him on stage, chat about his time, not only as the body double of Snoke in The Last Jedi, but also as a Wookiee in Solo: A Star Wars Story. So this is the second part of the chat with Ross. A bit of me talking, questions from the crowd, general nonsense. Here's the audio.
Last Jedi, you're the big tall guy on set. On Solo, you're one of a number of tall guys on set.
Yeah.
Did you get a bit of a sense of camaraderie with the other actors?
It was like a brotherhood. And I've said that before and I'll say it again. It was literally, I gained three brothers on that set. We spent the best part of 14 months all together.
Wow.
We spent not that much time on like 14 months on set, but like from literally all being auditioned and then scanned and everything else and going through like fitting rooms and things. So yeah, we did gain, and we stayed in touch.
Yeah.
Funny enough, Paul Davis, who is the drill rookie, he's also a director, and he did a film called The Body, and Daisy Ridley's boyfriend, Tom Bateman, that's it, Bateman, is in the main character in his film, so it's all kind of good. And then Daisy visited his set, and Paul said, "Oh, I've been working with your mate Ross." So, yeah. So it's all kind of connected in a very small way.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So yeah, we did. We got on very, very well indeed. In fact, we had playing cards, and if you know that famous picture of four dogs playing.
Yeah, yeah,
poker,
yeah.
We recreated that as bookies. So there is that photograph there somewhere.
I want to see that.
Any question? Here we go. Go on.
Yeah. So Peter Mayhew has mentioned a few times how physically demanding the role was.
Mm.
So how did you prepare to be the Wookiee?
Well, through the audition, sort of like stage, Paul Casey did the choreography for it, and he said that you have to try and pretend that you've just been abused and whipped and sort of like pushed your limit, and you have to like, try and get into that mode. I've worked in retail, I know what it's like. So I kind of went back to that. One of the things that we had to do was push some crates around, some heavy crates. And so I was pushing it from one side to the other. And at one point, I smacked my knee on the crate, and I was limping and I'm in agony. And he goes, "That's really good acting, well done." And I think, you know, that'll add to your performance. I was going, "It's lovely, my knee's bleeding, but yay." I had to really get into that sort of like mindset. But I was very lucky to actually work with Peter Mayhew 11 years ago on the 30th anniversary of Star Wars, or at least Heroes and Villains, where I got to actually play Chewbacca whilst he was signing. And I was going around his wife Angie was saying that you had like to hold the bowcaster correctly and do the voice like the roar. So I kind of like hopped back into that. So it's you have to sort of you do get like after how we would walk and how and just you just have to look at what Jonas and Ari Decker was moving because Ari was the stunt chewy. So it was just you just like. Other people would influence you, and you have to just use that as an show how we would walk. And then I was just watch some old footage of Empire and Return of the Jedi and see how we'd move and run around that way. So that's kind of how I prepared.
Is there anything from the original movie that you look back now and think, how did Peter Mayhew did? You know, How do you do that?
Yeah, I did, because there wasn't any sort of like cooling systems. They just had like a little umbrella and drinking and things, and we all had little cooling systems in our suits. But I didn't really use it that much because it was just because of the fact that there was a yak hair that I had that kept me cool anyway. And we just had like runners and stuff, just, you know, it's water and fans and whenever we needed to. Particularly the tunnel sequences, we'd have to stop every 5 to 10 minutes because we were literally the million. I don't know how he did it. But with Anthony Daniels being as tack on solo, we were saying, like, you know, it's really hot in these suits. And then we realised that he was C-3PO in, like, Tunisia, you know, so he's like, this is nothing compared to what I was doing. So it's like, oh, yeah, we'll just shut up and keep going then.
You mentioned the cooling systems in the suits. How do they work?
I believe what it is that they have it on rock and troll, I believe, and they just have it like a little, like a pack on their harness. And so it's all underneath all the fur and things like that. And then, so if the actor does need to have some air, they just literally press a button on the set and it starts working up a little fan inside the inside there, and it sort of keeps all nice and cool and refreshed, and then I think water gets pumped into the there as well, so it's all nice and fresh for them and stuff. I know, it's nothing like it was before, apparently.
No. Any other questions?
There you go. In terms of Snoke, how much did you know about the story, where it was going to go?
I knew from the first day, I knew what was going to happen to him. I didn't know how he was going to get chopped up, but I knew that he was going to get, like, we were shown images and things of how, like, they can, the drawings and things, like the pre-production drawings and storyboards and things, and so we knew what he was going to look like, because no one actually knew what he was going to wear. All the gold costume was for the Jedi. We didn't see, only see a hologram in Force Awakens. So I saw those illustrations and things, and then they said, oh, basically this is how, halfway through the film, something happened to him, but, you know, don't say what it is. After we shot, I couldn't talk about Jedi for 18 months. So it was a killer. But no, as I say, I didn't know how he was going to get chopped in half and things like that. So it was a surprise, you know, but we had to. I think the last day on set, it was literally when he catches the lightsaber and puts it to his side, and then you just saw, like, I have to sort of like be like this for about couple of hours. I had to sit like this while they just set up the shots and things. And then I was lucky enough to watch the rehearsal for the battle sequences and things. So that was nice. And that was it, really. But then when I saw it on the screen, I see him get sort of spliced in half. Yeah. I felt it right there.
I wouldn't feel too bad, because the last guy that got chopped in half in a Star Wars film came back 20 years later, so you've got a job in 2038. I think you'll be all right. Who knows? Any other questions? here we go.
Can you actually do the Wookiee roar?
I can do what they told us to do on the set, which is sort of like the... it might not sound like anything now, because I've been drinking on sore throat, but it's... it's like a sort of a method. It's my madness, isn't it? Like a... That's what we're doing. So more nasally in there. Really bad.
It sounds better than you probably think. Here we go, Mr. Booker. Yeah.
Do you collect the toys?
Yeah, I do. Although, there are things I would like to get, which is, I'm hoping they're going to do some, maybe like the new Wookiees set. So that'll be the first thing I'd get my hands on. But yeah, I used to collect all the toys from all the vintage toys and things. And I just wish I kept them in packets.
You wait till tomorrow, you'll see. And you'll be like, no! Yeah, would you go back and tell young you that you weren't allowed to have your toys though?
I should do my very best. I did have a Boba Fett slave ship. And I had the box for it and everything. I was trying to keep it pristine. And then your mum found it one day and thought, oh, I don't need this anymore, and got chucked. And I was like, oh. If only
find a really nice one tomorrow, send your mum a photo.
Oh, she can't, I chucked her. So, no, she'll call me for that. I did use to collect the toys. I've got my own Pop and my Black Series and my Lego figure, and that's also quite incredible as well. Yeah. Andy's always like, oh, Andy Serkis with Snoke, but again, he never actually got to wear the costume on set, so therefore,
did you try it on
him? Myself as, sorry?
You didn't try it on him? Okay, try this on Andy.
It was like, he was swamping, you know.
Bless.
Yeah, he was longer than I am, so it was like, it went past me, slippered feet and everything, but...
Were they comfy?
They were. I said to Michael Castellan, who made the costume, I said, do you want to be able to make me a couple of pairs of slippers, or a pair of slippers for me, would you? He said, have you got a spare £3,000? So I was like, no.
Slippers?
Yeah, it was made to measure gold slippers, isn't it? So I'd like to get another Darth Vader with an actual cloak on him this time. You know, but I don't know, it's like gold dust. So, no?
Not tomorrow.
Yeah. You'll be okay tomorrow.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow. Yeah.
So if you had the opportunity to do more another Star Wars project, what kind of character would you like to play? Because you played a Wookiee, like a hero kind of character. You played the Supreme Leader. Mm. What other kind of role would you like to have a crack at?
I've only done one film where you actually see my face. So it'd be nice maybe to do another film that actually see my face. I've always wanted to be a Wookiee, so I kind of like, you know, who knows what they want to watch?
Yeah.
Basically watching his face, isn't it, really?
Cool. It's a good niche to be in, though, isn't it?
Yes. I honestly thought, because I don't play basketball, I thought, well, where else is a 7-footer going to do? Maybe play crazy golf.
Crazy golf.
Yeah, but that wouldn't like it if I stand down in the windmill. It's a joke that never gets funny. I don't mind doing fantasy work or sci-fi work, because being tall, it kind of like you can be aliens and monsters and creatures and things, and I don't want that at all. Yeah. I really don't. It's, if they never see my face again, then you know I can do crime watch and get away with it. Sort of thing.
Well, that's a good point. That's very good point. We're also talking about Star Wars, but are there any other franchises that would interest you? Any other films that you'd have any interest in being part of?
I would like to be in Bond. Bond would be the.
That'd be the one.
Yeah, like if they did maybe like a. Another Bond, tall Bond villain.
Yeah.
Who knows? Jaws, the son, like some Jaws.
Jaws the Revenge.
No, I don't want to do that. No, that would be the thing. Bond. There is a film coming out next year that I guess I can tell you about the now the trailer's out for it. But Artless Fowl.
Oh,
oh, nice,
brilliant.
So watch out for that.
Yeah.
And the closest I've got to do it is I've got a bit of screen time with Julie Dench. So I guess that's M in Bond.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, but hey, you know, if they say you would like the Bond, then I'm there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I'd like to do.
Well, hopefully you're not done with Star Wars and there's other things on the horizon, but if you were and you've done what you'll ever do, what would be the one memory that you would take away? If you had like one little snapshot moment, what would it be? Pop them today, obviously.
Oh, no, this is the best, It's all come to this. Yeah, 2-for-1 on beer is great. That's definitely the price I was looking for. I guess meeting Mark Hamill was like one of those things that do stick in the mind. Being directed by Ron Howard, but then just literally realising a dream. I think that's what it is. I know it might be a bit cliche, but for me, like, always think of myself that I was meant to be a Wookiee. You know, even when I was a young 10-year-old, like 5 or 10, And that's true. Well, if the teacher can see me now, looking up at me. I would take that experience to the fact is that I said I was going to be a Wookiee and hell. Once on screen, once out off the screen, and I tell you one thing, I'm very quickly, I know I've got to get on, but one thing they did actually, which was quite nice, I was sitting in the canteen on the Star Wars set, and Anthony Daniels comes in with his wife, sits down, after he has his food, he gets up, walks over and stops, and says, "Where do I know you're from?" And I just stand up and went, "That's where I know you're from. You're from Comic Cons and things like that. How are you?" And I was like, I'm good, thank you. We had a nice chat. He walked off and I sat down again. And Paul says, "Oh, there you go. That's something for memory bank, isn't it? Like, he actually just took time to say hello to you." I was like, "It's all nice all this, isn't it?" So, yeah, no, those little things I would keep in there. And it's like, it's there. There.
That's fantastic. Thanks for talking to us.
No, thank you very much.
Yeah. Big round of applause for us.
Three new Star Wars films have been announced, dates for 2022, 24 and 26, all in December, which feels like Star Wars is month now, especially now Infinity War and now Endgame. I mean, Endgame's just going, I think only Avatar's ahead of it now. It's probably going to pass it within the next couple of weeks. Is the biggest movie ever, probably make $3 billion by the time it's done. So leave May to Marvel and the Avengers films, April and May, leave them alone. Star Wars belongs now, I guess, in December, because it worked so well for all the films other than poor old Solo. It's got a bit of a battery. My question to you, David, what do you think those three movies are going to be? Do you think they're going to be the Benioff and Weiss trilogy? Do you think it's the Rian Johnson trilogy? Is it three standalone Star Wars stories?
Lobot, Max Rebo and Zuvio.
Works for me.
That would be the results of the fan poll, if ever there was one. But they're too afraid to do that, so they kind of like misdirect and then bring in Rianne and the Game of Thrones guys in. Where they've talked about all of these things, they haven't actually confirmed what these ones relate to, or even if, I mean, Rianne said he's still working on it.
Been working on it for a while.
So my guess would be something along those lines. I mean, how do you feel about the fact that, I mean, one of the things that everybody's kind of like come back with is like, oh my word, you know, it's like 3 years into another start. It's like, no, it's not. You've got like tons of TV content coming in between then. How do you feel about this change of pace? Do you feel that this is allowing things to be more carefully orchestrated, or do you think it's not enough after we've kind of got accustomed to like the pace that we've been going at?
If there was no Star Wars stories, and if there was no TV, and even if there was no animation, I'd be happy if it was every 3 years, because I think Star Wars is main event. Circus is coming to town, movie making, and when Star Wars lands, it's on the news, it's on telly and radio and everywhere. You start seeing it in the shops and it's ahead. It's a big event. It's a cultural impact event. And I think if you release too much Star Wars too quickly, unless the quality is supremely high, which only raises the benchmark for everything else that comes after it, which is what you always want, of course, I think it just makes it really, really difficult. That being said, these films coming out, if TV links in with the films and there's some synergy, which I can't imagine there won't be, and more animation, it is a different era. It's not the same as it used to be. Everything has changed. I'm excited. As long as the quality of content stays high and people are invested, I think it's good that they're not tipped their hand quite yet to saying what they're going to do. I'm not entirely sure. I'm sure they know what they want to do, but maybe not exactly when they want to do it. And it wouldn't surprise me one iota if more announcements were made either at D23 or San Diego Comic-Con. Nothing would surprise me there. But I would imagine that's probably more in line of the Disney Plus content.
And parks as well. You've got so many irons in the fire at the moment that it's kind of, in 3 years' time, you won't see Star Wars as a movie franchise. It would just be like the multimedia that you had with Shadows of the Empire, you know, on all fronts, in everything but the movie scenario going on.
Yeah. That's a good thought, actually. I like that. I'm not considered it that way. But yes, it is the films now as Star Wars as an IP and as a brand. The films and TV are just part of it. One thing I do miss is back in the day when you had a film every 3 years, it gave the licensees time to roll out a proper program of toy releases and all that stuff. So I think it's too condensed and too squashed.
Yeah, my main gripe with all of this is you're not exploring the weird and wonderful that's gone into it, especially over the last sort of couple of years. It's like, right, yeah, we need a Finn, we need a Rey, we need a Poe, we need a Rose, we need a Han, we need a Kira, we need a Tobias Beckett, yeah, and then that's it. All of this kind of insane stuff that has been designed up for, like, creatures and yeah, backdrops and things
third
like that.
Insect just, from the left doesn't get an action figure.
It's just not even looked at because we just need to cater for this. And before you know it, you're then moving on to the next film release, so you never actually get to have a look at that. And I remember pretty much every single member of the cantina had some kind of backstory and action figure and comic book and this whole lore behind them, and pretty much everyone in Jabba's palace did as well. I couldn't actually really name you any of the characters in Maz Kanath, apart from Quiggy or whatever his name is, you know, everybody else. But back when things were done that way, you would know everything because you just learn through osmosis of all the stuff that's coming out. Oh, there's the action figure, the action figure's name is that guy, and oh, it's that person, you know, there'd be a novel out that relates to things, or comic books and stuff like that, but there just isn't the opportunity to do that. And you think of how much stuff has been created, that rich universe for it. It's no more or no less than what you've had before. It's just not exploited to the same degree.
Yeah.
So you don't appreciate it.
Exploited is a really good word, not in the negative sense, but in the positive sense, because you're absolutely right. All those characters, Star Wars does it better than anyone, and the characters are all there. I'm sure they're all there.
Oh, yeah.
Like I say, we're not making enough of a deal of it, and that's, you think of the, you've nailed it, all those characters in the cantina, but collectors will go, I'm really invested in this character or that character, and they're like nothing background characters. And I suppose you come forward to today when Admiral Ackbar gets sucked out the window in The Last Jedi, and a lot of the fandom are like, well, I don't care, it's just a guy in a rubber head. And yet at Star Wars Fan Fun Day, just gone this past weekend, Tim Rose had lines around the room because he was Admiral Ackbar and everybody cared about Admiral Ackbar, you know, different perspective on what those peripheral characters kind of mean to the fans. And like you say today, they're not exploited, but if this was 1983, you know, you said Maz's Castle, perfect example. Pretty much every character in there would not just have a page in the short story book, they'd have a proper full history. And I miss that. So I think the longer the gap, the better. I don't mind that. I like investigating the characters and the stories.
It's doing it a disservice because that's what you started out with. Even before you went into kind of like the nerdiness and expanded universe side of things of Star Wars, even at a kid level, like you say, in comic books, in like your souvenir photo album, in stickers, as action figures, as just merchandise, you would know all these things. They weren't necessarily the names that they ended up with, like Klaatu and Weequay and stuff like that, but you knew that those characters, as far as you were concerned at that point in time, that was their name. It was only later, you know, it's then expanded upon and stuff like that. All of that concept, refinement, design and craft has gone into creating those things, but then they're just not given anything near the amount of love or attention that they once had. Fast forward to Star Wars Fun Day, Family Fun Days in another 30 years time or so, will those characters that played the current ones now have those lines that Tim Rose did back then? Because they haven't had that kind of exploration of those characters. You know, it's like, well, who is that? Who cares? Whereas, you know, some of these other characters have gone on to like be cult characters because of the fiction and stories that have been created around those things without necessarily giving you any hint of that when you saw them on screen. I always think of the Deveronian dude, the Butcher of Montserrat or whatever it was. It was a really cool story. Hammerhead, you know, he was like a good guy and he was a gardener and all this kind stuff. And it's kind of like, what? It's great fun stuff. R5-D4, Skippy, you've got so much of it there. Might work going forward, but what we've just had, you'll probably never get a revisit of that. Nobody will probably ever go back and look at those things in the same way because they're looking at what is the current or the upcoming. So you will have almost like the dark times of post-Jedi before sort of like Heir to the Empire. You could almost argue that in terms of content and lore, we're actually in a roundabout way in a dark times period because we're not expanding and looking at these things. It's being done, but nowhere near to the degree of what you had, just purely because there's a film release every 12 months and there just isn't the opportunity. You know, people aren't going to go back and revisit characters from The Force Awakens now because it's 4 years on, or even like Rogue One or Last Jedi or Solo perhaps, but like Rise of Skywalker going forward, because you've got that breathing space, you'll probably have a lot more in-depth look at these things.
Just like I say, just feel like missed opportunities, but in terms of the new stuff that's coming, great, without giving too much away. I've just interviewed Warwick Davis, really good chat about stuff, and one of the things that he said was, Star Wars fans are used to feast and famine, which is a really good phrase, because back in the day, you were, weren't you? You know, you had the original trilogy, then the Dark Times, then I think since the 90s, it's pretty much been fairly consistent, but you know, there's been ebbs and flows, and after Revenge of the Sith, you thought it would go quiet, then the Clone Wars came out, pretty much been always there, but now I can't see any ebbs. It's all flow. Lots to do and see, as the kids say.
I can't say I've ever seen any kids say that, but...
I don't know. I'm just making this up as I go along.
Oh, Mark, don't ever change.
Okay.
Hello, Vanthatrax. Vanthatrax, I screwed it up. Hi, Vanthatrax.
This past weekend, up in Burnley, Star Wars Fan Fun Day, a whole bunch of Panthers did it last year. This year, there was myself, there was Claire, and there was Carl, who went up. And we met up with Andy Leith whilst we were up there. Had a cracking weekend. Dinner with the Stars, great fun. Fan Fun Day, always fun. Got loads of really cool audio. Some of the audio will be going on one of our new podcasts, Planet Leia, which is launching very soon. But the rest of the content will be going here on Making Tracks. And the first of that content is with Hugh Quarshie, who played Captain Panaka in The Phantom Menace. So here's me chatting with Hugh Quarshie.
So we're here at Star Wars Fan Fun Day. The day is winding down, but it's been particularly busy. I'm here with Hugh Quarshie. How's the day been for you?
Oh, look, it's been stress-free. I'll go further. It's been actually quite enjoyable. You know, it's not on the same scale as a celebration, but it's a lot more intimate. And there's no less passion and enthusiasm, but it's also a lot more relaxed, because in the States, let's be honest, you can never be quite sure what to expect. You know, they had to enlist the help of the Chicago Police Department just to guarantee our security. You know, as far as I can tell, there are, and I think there's one copper off duty here.
Yes.
But for the most part, there's an acceptable level of weirdness. You know, the passion of the fans, and that's always a pleasure to see.
It's one of these shows, especially on the UK scene, that's so well regarded because it's a family friendly show. And we're looking around, there's little kids everywhere. And do you enjoy that? Obviously, interaction with fans who know the character, know the film, the history of it, but also meeting the little kids that are just getting into it for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose they must look at their parents and think, are you weird, Daddy? But then they come along and see there's a lot of other daddies who are equally weird, and it's not just harmless fun. You do realise ultimately that although this is a kind of a fantasy-based fictional universe, nevertheless, for a lot of people, it's part of their reality, you know, and they can choose to which bits of their imagination to live out. And that, I think, is always an important lesson for any kid to learn, that, you know, you can, to some extent, you can choose your identity, you can choose your reality.
Yeah.
And clearly, as long as it's not harming anybody, as long as it's fun, it's actually done with goodwill to all men, then it can also be really quite therapeutic, and I can only applaud that.
Can you believe now, I mean, 20 years since the film came out, probably 22 since you made it, can you believe that amount of time has passed, that we're that far beyond Phantom Menace?
Yeah, well, I can, because every morning I look at myself and think, where did all that grey hair come from? You know? But, yeah, I mean, it is remarkable. I think that the film has held up pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, it did push the boundaries of filmmaking, because there was a major switch from film to digital. The advances of CGI that Industrial Light and Magic had made, it was almost like a calling card for ILM.
Yeah.
I think initially there may have been a certain amount of cynicism about it, because there weren't so many action figures for kids to collect.
Sure.
and the merchandise was quite profitable, let's face it. But I think it is interesting, though, that it did dare to go in a darker direction. And in that regard, it was perhaps a bit more grown up. You know, the decision to cast Natalie Portman, I found all that really quite interesting. And it's not surprising that the film has held up as well as it has, because I think there were elements in it which perhaps people didn't notice the first time around. You know, there was such a vehement reaction almost to Jar Jar Binks, and the effect that that had for a lasting effect on Ahmed Best. You know, I don't think people quite realize how traumatic it was for him for a while, but I'm so pleased that he's held out, and 20 years later he's come good. There's been a sort of 180 degree turn, and actually people think, you know, what he did was skillful, when it was bold, and it was, you know, as well as being entertaining. And so I feel really pleased for him that he's been sort of not simply rehabilitated but vindicated and, yes, and celebrated now. Yes. So that's all good.
And were you aware when you were making the film, in one sense, what a technological advance it was, and two, culturally, you know, it's the return of Star Wars, and it was such a big deal in the 80s and the 70s, and it's coming back in the 90s. Was that something that you were aware of, or was it, yeah, was it all about the work?
It was, I think that it'd been something like a 17-year wait between the Return of the Jedi and The Phantom Menace. And so, yeah, there was an eager anticipation. The making of it turned out to be on the floor of the studio a little bit more mundane, because there was always so much green screen going on, and there were occasions when we were reacting to things that weren't there, yeah, or some tall guy wearing a funny mask on his head, you know, yeah, and you had to keep a straight face. So it was, it did require a certain amount of discipline and make believe, you know, in the same way that you know, you kids might play in the playground. I mean, I remember it's funny when Liam and Ewan doing their sword fights initially with metal lightsabers, and then going shh, you know, until it was pointed out to them that they didn't have to do the sound effects. So, as I say, it was at times a bit pedestrian and mundane, the actual filmmaking of it. But then the time, the effort, the cost went into the green screen, into what was put on post-production, and then you realise just how much of an achievement the whole thing was technically, you know. And indeed, that's what I said to George Lucas.
And when you saw it for the first time, I mean, when did you see it for the first? Was it the premiere? Or?
I saw a screening, I think. Was it in London, or I certainly went to a screening in Los Angeles. Yes, I saw it. I think twice before I saw the premiere in London, and there was always something to that you hadn't noticed before, and there were times when, you know, you're wondering, wait, was that real or was that CGI? Yesterday, I switched on the TV when I was got into the hotel here, and there was some low-budget, low-brow version of the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, yeah, you know, those terrible, you know, early Ray Harryhausen models that had a Cyclops who'd picked up some poor old member of Sinbad's crew and was slowly spit-roasting. Yeah. it was knowing what we're now capable of, okay, it was comical, it was ludicrous and absurd, you know, yeah, whereas, you know, you never really feel that with a Star Wars film. You just the impossible seems totally believable, yeah, you know, and in that regard, I think Lucasfilm and ILM have done us a great service.
Yeah, you know? And you're pleased now, 20 years on, the film's getting its due. You mentioned Ahmed, things have come good and come full circle for him in a positive way. And the film now is much more, or far more fairly regarded than perhaps it was in previous years.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't think it's going to be, it's not going to be celebrated in the same way or revered in the same way, perhaps, as, say, The Empire Strikes Back, yeah, has been. But there were elements in the film which were, I think, which went unnoticed, you know, which perhaps went unappreciated at the time, which are now being appreciated. And I think in that regard, it is the, you know, the sound and the vision in particular, and some of the themes running through it, you know, the diversity of the imperial of the Senate, you know, it was very much like a sort of almost like it was almost prescient, you know, given what's happening at the UN these days, and the threat to the continued existence or the effectiveness of the United Nations is coming from the evil empire,
yes.
Whom, which I'd better not name, you know. But you do think. Did George Lucas anticipate the arrival of President Trump?
He always seemed to be tapping into something, didn't he?
You know, it's extraordinary, just what is happening in the real world, and in a way, whether that's sort of somehow echoing what happened fictionally 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, in the same way that when President Reagan was talking about the Star Wars space protection against nuclear missiles, you know, that people have picked up themes and ideas from the Star Wars film, which you don't really realise until it happens a couple of decades later.
Yeah, and you forget how deeply Star Wars is ingrained into the zeitgeist as well. It's part of the conversation, isn't it?
Now, I know that there is still some, perhaps understandably, some resistance to the idea of the Americanization of our imagination. You know, I went to an event in France once where a lot of people dressed up as famous Star Wars characters, but the French being French, they came dressed up as Napoleon and as Marie Antoinette. You know? And it was a way of saying, you know, the hell with you, you know.
Yeah.
Just because it's Star Wars, it doesn't mean we can't continue to be French, you know. So in that regard, I think, the Star Wars universe has, to some extent, you know, diversified and internationalized, you know, with Donnie Yen, with there were a lot more people of African origin, of Asian origin, in the new trilogy, in the second trilogy, and the continuing film since then. So, I think it is as if Star Wars film recognizes that it does have a moral responsibility to the universe.
Absolutely, and it makes all the sense in the world. It's an eclectic, diverse galaxy. It's supposed to be like that anyway, isn't it?
So, exactly. Yeah.
It's good that it's happened.
Anyway, all right.
And thank you so much for your time.
All right, not my pleasure.
Thank you. So we're at the end of another epic episode of Making Tracks. I'd like to thank my co-host, Miguel Sanchez. Miguel, where can people find you?
You'll never find Miguel Sanchez. Miguel Sanchez is a ghost. You will be able to find me at All the Cool Stuff in Fordingbridge, or you can find us on Facebook at All the Cool Stuff. Also on the Fanthatrax YouTube channel, Fanthatrax TV, which is bolting out amazing content thanks to the skilled hands of Martin Keeler. But if I was to try and find someone to recruit to the Miguel Sanchez army of ghosts, Mark, where would I look to recruit you? Where am I going with this?
I got no idea.
So where would I find you?
You would find me. You'd find me on Twitter at prefect_timing, and often on the website. In fact, always on the website, and noodling around doing stuff at Star Wars Insider and Star Trek magazine and places like that. So just doing general tit-tattery here, there, and everywhere. And if you want to find Fanthatrax, Fanthatrax Radio, that's a home of podcasts on Fanthatrax. You can give us an email, radio@fanthatrax.com, or you can speak to us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, or Tumblr, all at Fanthatrax. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Android, Spotify, SoundCloud, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Spreaker. And we're on smart speakers like Amazon Alexa. Now, somebody from Lucasfilm, I will not say their name, but somebody from Lucasfilm actually asked his Alexa to say, "Give me Star Wars news," and Fanthatrax came on, which I thought was wonderful. I'm not going to name the person, but I just thought that was fantastic. You can also find us on Apple HomePod, Google Home, and on Sonos. You can get us in the car with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. You can get us on gaming consoles and on your television. And of course, as you've just said, you can find us on Fanthatrax TV or the Fanthatrax app. Apps are out now for Google, and so in the Google Play, and also for iPhones and all that weird iPhone-y stuff without the back button. So that's us, I think, for this episode. Thank you, Dave, as always, and we're going to get together next week and do another one really quick, so we haven't done one for ages, have we?
No, that'd be excellent.
I did all that on one breath, and I didn't read any of it. It was all remembered.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And banthas fly. See you next week, Dave.
See you later.